GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Hey, good afternoon, all. Welcome to the Thursday edition of GX on Agriculture. It's 17 after 12, after 1 in Manitoba. Coming up on GX on Agriculture today, of course, we'll hear from our winner this week in GX 94 Supper in the Field contest. Had a great visit out at the Makowski Farm in the Kenora area last night with Andrian and wife April and their three kids and family and friends who were all there for the Kentucky Fried Chicken Supper. We enjoyed that, and then I had a nice chat with Andrian, afterwards, and talked about the farm. So we'll hear from Andrian McCoskey coming up on the program here today. Also, Saskatchewan Agriculture releases its weekly crop report today, and we've topped 50% or halfway in our east central region with harvest. We'll hear more from Daphne Cruz on that front. First, though, the agriculture weather outlook. It's a presentation of York and Raymore and Watrous, New Holland, and Sean Prahika, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
And it's time now for Precision Weather with meteorologist Phil Spivak. I know we've been talking about getting kind of ugly as we get closer to the weekend, but for today, Phil, it doesn't look too bad.
No, not at all. There is some cloud drifting in from the west. A lot of the moisture with it, though, is drying up as it approaches. So we're going to get into the cloud cover. It's just not going to produce much rainfall. Areas west of Yorkton may see a couple of odd showers through this evening, through the early part of the overnight. But most of us, especially to western Manitoba, but likely including the Yorkton area, do stay dry tonight. We're up to around 18 this afternoon. Not bad. Sunshine has been working on warming the temperatures up, and now as the cloud cover moves in, we'll slow a bit, but not bad. Temperature tonight falls off to around 4, a partly to mostly cloudy sky. Again, more cloud south, west, and more clear sky east. Through the day tomorrow, there's going to be another push of moisture. This one basically is going to tap what's already here, and then a little disturbance is going to pull a little bit more in from the west. With that, there could be a couple of showers that flare up through the later part of the day, just about a 1 in 4 chance of that. Temperature near 15. A little more cloud cover, a little cooler tomorrow. Our weather, though, is still largely dominated by an area of high pressure, which is in control across a good chunk of the country. We're basically the southern end of the high right now. It's anchored pretty much from central western Saskatchewan all the way across northern Ontario, and that whole dome there, which stretches almost to the Pacific, is quiet. The storms that are moving through and affecting us with a chance of rain are trying to cut in underneath that high, moving basically along the border. So it's a close call for some of these, but by the time we get to later Friday night and into Saturday, the western side of that high is going to buckle, and that's going to transfer the stronger, fair sky to the east and allow some of that moisture to move in for us. So we'll get a few showers coming in for Friday night. These will still be very light, spotty showers Friday night, but they are more likely, down to 6 for a low. Into the day Saturday, it's not going to be a continuous event where those showers lead into a more likely rainfall. There will be a break, but then later Saturday, showers will redevelop, and this time they do become a little bit steadier. And through the later part of Saturday and Saturday night, and then especially through Sunday, that's when we start to get into some pretty heavy rainfall. 15 is the high Saturday. Sunday, we drop off to around 9 or 10 for the overnight low Saturday night, and then just hold there through the day. As a storm tracks to our south, it's going to kick up a very gusty east to southeast wind through the day Sunday, but also produce some steady, heavy rainfall through the day. Some of the computer models indicating 20 to 30 millimeters over the course of the day Sunday. High again, only around 10. Still some lingering showers. They'll be generally lighter, though, on Monday, on and off, though, through the day with a high 4.
All right, thank you, Phil. Now, turning to this hour's temperature roundup, 9 degrees in Saskatoon, cool over on the western side of the province. La Paw, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 12, 13 in Hudson Bay this afternoon. Dauphin, Shoal Lake, Russell, Regina, all reporting 14 degrees, 15 in Indian Head. Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, 16. In the Yorkton-Melville region, well, partly sunny, mainly sunny if you'd like. The wind is calm, relative humidity 55%. Our current temperature up 1 in the past hour, now 15 degrees. Yesterday's high and low, 14 and 2. Normals for this date, we'd expect daytime highs right around 17 and our overnight lows near 4. The hot spot in the province yesterday, well, there were two. Coronach and Kindersley both got up to 18. The coolest place in the province, Uranium City, minus 3. In Manitoba, Sprague, 18, was the warmest place in the province. Lynn Lake, the Manitoba cool spot, at minus 2. Sunrise this morning was at 6:21, and the sun will set this evening at 10 after 7. It's 12:23, now 1:23 in Manitoba. You're listening to GX on Agriculture. A quick break, and we're right back after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. AgriView is coming up next. You've heard people say the numbers don't lie, but they can be somewhat deceiving sometimes. According to Saskatchewan Agriculture's weekly crop report, harvest progress is well ahead of the five-year average for this time of year. In our east central region, growers now have 49% of the crops in the bin, up from the five-year average of 27% for this region. Saskatchewan Agriculture's Daphne Cruz says there's a caveat to that.
I think what's mostly bringing that average down is 2014, where at this time of year we were at 6% for the East Central, and that was because we, at the end of August, there was 3 weeks of rain, then we had a two-week break where things looked pretty good, and then it rained again for another 2 weeks. So 2014 was a year I think that most producers remember, but would like to put out of their heads, I think.
And it's kind of skewing our results still.
It is skewing our results, yeah, that's for sure. Because other than that, like last year in 2017, we were at 57% combine for the East Central. So right on par with the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. It's just 2014 that's bringing that average down. That's the anomaly.
Cruz says favorable weather for most of the province last week allowed producers to continue to make good progress in the field.
By the weekend, though, some rain showers had rolled through, particularly on the east side and northern parts of the province. But provincially, we're sitting at 58% of the crop in the bin, which is ahead of the five-year average of 37% for this time of year. So the forecast for the next week or two doesn't look overly promising. Some cloudier days with some cooler temperatures, but hopefully we'll get a few breaks here and continue to keep the combines rolling.
We have heard from a lot of growers who say that because it's been so dry, canola wasn't curing. Is the rain we received over the past week enough to rectify that situation, Daphne?
Yeah, I think depending on, you know, the maturity of the canola, either before they swathed or as they're waiting to straight cut it, definitely some rain can help cure or clear out some of the green in the seed. And so, you know, if that was the case, then hopefully the rain that did come, depending on the area, Moosomin got 14 millimeters, Rose Valley 15, and then once we head closer up more toward Nipawin, they really got a lot of rain, which up there I don't think they really want at this time, and they had 34 millimeters. So at this time of year, especially for a lot of the province, they want the rain. For those who aren't finished combining, it's one of those things that's not the best timing, but it's that's the way it goes this time of year for sure, especially in September.
Unfortunately, the driest areas of the province, the southwest and west central regions, didn't see much rain last week.
So those areas in particular are still hoping for some significant rainfall here coming up, especially because a lot of the farmers there are either finishing up or some have already put the combines away. And so some rain there for that side of the province would definitely be appreciated.
Cruz says 96% of lentils, 94% of field peas, 73% of durum, 46% of spring wheat, 38% of canola, and 14% of flax and soybeans have now been combined.
Crop yields, depending on the district, seem to be anywhere from below average to above average. That doesn't tell us a whole lot, I know, but it all depends where the rain fell and at what time and how much. Even within areas that did have decent rainfall throughout the year, we're hearing, you know, yields just 1 or 2 miles down the road on the same crop, let's say of canola, yielded very differently within the same farm. So yields are kind of everywhere, and producers are just basically attributing that to where the rain fell. When we look across the grades for the province, durum is 60% estimated to grade number one, while 34% is expected to fall in the number two category. When we look at the provincial pea crop, 50% is estimated to fall in number one and 46% in number two. And across the board with lentils, 46% of the lentils are estimated to grade number one and 49% number two.
Cruz says most of the crop damage this past week was due to frost.
And looking at the temperature map, it ranged anywhere from just hovering around 0 to minus 4, minus 5 in the northern regions of the province. I believe Prince Albert, Nipawin, and a bit further south, we got to that minus 4 for several hours. So some of those areas did experience, I guess, a killing frost. And with that, we're noticing that, especially in the north on some of those greener canola crops, that there was some damage. Further in the south, most of the crop sounded like it was further along that it didn't get a lot of damage, but some of those later seeded crops of canola, and particularly soybeans, did sustain some frost damage last week.
Saskatchewan Agriculture Crops Specialist Daphne Cruz. It's coming up on 1230, 130 in Manitoba. We have AgriView coming up next.
GX94, AgriView.
USDA issued a surprise increase yesterday to its corn harvest forecast due to expectations of record yields in key production states. Soybean yields were seen at an all-time high, with the production outlook raised above its already record-high forecast. USDA also boosted its outlook for Russian wheat production, where concerns about dry conditions had raised concerns about export cuts from that key global supplier. In its monthly supply and demand report, USDA pegged the 2018-19 corn harvest at 14.82 billion bushels, which would be the second largest ever. And government forecast average corn yields at a record 181 bushels per acre. That surprised analysts, who were expecting a decline in the corn yield. Soybean production was seen at 4.69 billion bushels, based on average yields of just under 53 bushels an acre. The forecast for Russian wheat production was raised by 3 million tons to 71 million tons. The Canadian Grain Commission says it will continue to exempt feed mills, agents with primary or process elevator facilities, and producer railway car loading facilities from licensing requirements. The commission says it made the decision after consulting with the sector. It says grain handlers that fall under one of three categories don't need a license, as long as they follow the rules that go along with the exemptions. The commission says the decision will allow it to maintain the efficient handling of Canadian grain without increasing costs for the sector. The Winnipeg-based commission is responsible for maintaining Canada's grain quality standards. Railway companies, grain companies, and farm organizations met yesterday in Saskatoon. There were no guarantees of improved grain transportation this winter, but the railways believe new locomotives, hopper cars, and additional employees will make a difference. Those capital purchases were made as a result of changes made in Bill C-49, which was passed earlier this year. CN Rail's CEO, Jean-Jacques Rouet, was at yesterday's meeting.
Cars have been built in Hamilton, they've been delivered in wintertime. Locomotive have been built in Texas, they've been delivered since the month of June. We've been hiring people since last fall. It takes 6 months to train them. We have been more and more qualified conductors. This year, we're investing $40 million of track and double siding in Western Canada so we can put more train on the grid. All these things take time, but we'll have a lot of these resources for entering the next winter, the coming winter.
Bill C-49 also includes reciprocal penalties for poor railway performance that leads to grain backlogs like we had last winter. Transport Minister Mark Garneau is looking for resiliency in the system.
Particularly when we face things that we can't totally predict ahead of time. I mean, if we could predict the weather ahead of time in the winter, if we could predict the market price ahead of time for grain and how big harvests would be, we would have less of a challenge. But what we do want to make sure is in place is as reliable as possible railway transportation system to get their grain to market.
Todd Lewis is president of the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan. He says both railways need to be ready this winter.
We heard about perhaps opportunities in new markets with Australian crop failure, that there might be opportunities for Canada, and we need to fill those needs. So, I think we've got to be light in our feet as far as transportation and getting the crop to where it's needed at the right place at the right time, and hopefully we're headed that way.
Kevin Hirsch is executive director of the Inland Terminal Association of Canada.
And as elevator companies around the table said today, they sell to what they think they can get for rail car movement. You know, they have an expectation for how many cars they're going to get based on their portion of the total that's been committed. That's what they sell to. When that falls short, that's when the problems arise. They've got sales that they can't meet.
Hirsch also notes that CN will have more grain to move this crop year than CP. That's because drought conditions have reduced production in southern areas where CP is the main carrier. Manitoba's Keystone Agricultural Producers will host a walking tour of the Winnipeg Exchange District this coming Sunday. The tour to show how ag was responsible for the area's establishment and growth, which in turn contributed to Winnipeg's growth. Agriculture still continues as an important economic driver in the province today. Past, present, and future will be highlighted through both heritage and newer buildings in the West and East Exchange area. The tour will take about an hour. We'll depart at 1 and again at 3 o'clock in front of Winnipeg City Hall. Historic photographs of buildings along the way will enhance the experience. Admission is free and everyone is welcome. The event is part of Open Farm Day, where farms across the province open their gates to give people a better understanding of agriculture. And one more thing. Hollywood stars are putting pressure on McDonald's over the treatment of chickens in the fast food giant's supply chain. Celebs have signed a letter on behalf of the Humane Society of the United States detailing concerns that chickens are bred too quickly. They also say McDonald's lets suppliers cram chickens into tightly packed warehouses where they're unable to engage in natural behaviors. The stars are urging McDonald's to follow the lead of some other fast food companies to improve conditions for these animals. The letter is signed by Alex Baldwin, Susan Sarandon, Joaquin Phoenix, and others. That is today's Ag Review. It's 12:38 now, 1:38 in Manitoba. We have the Livestock Market Report coming up next, and then we'll hear from our winner this week in GX94's Supper in the Field contest.
Livestock Market Conditions.
October live cattle closed down today at 110.80, down 67 cents. December live cattle, 115.40, down 12. October feeder cattle, 155.40, up 37. November feeder cattle, 155.07, up 25 cents. October lean hog futures closed down today at 55.67 a hundredweight, down 12. And December lean hogs, 55.92. up 30 cents. Those are today's closing U.S. livestock futures. We have the closing grain prices about 9 minutes away from now at 10 to 1, 10 to 2 in Manitoba. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald. Our winners this week in GX 94 Supper in the Field contest were Andrian and April Makowski.
We farm southeast of Kenora. We run a mixed operation, bison, grain, oil seeds, some specialty crops, mustard, and having fun doing it.
The Makowski farm spans about 6,600 acres. Andrian runs the farm along with his three brothers.
My brother Merlin, we're partners. And then we've got two other brothers that also farm with us. They're the silent partners, if you want to call it that loose term. We've got three employees, one part-time guy, and everybody comes to the table with a certain skill level, which makes it very interesting in the mornings when we all get together for half coffee before we go out and make the plan and then work the plan.
Two of the brothers have degrees in economics.
My youngest brother's an economist and my oldest brother's an economist. And just like I was saying before, I could write my third year economics, and I haven't read an economics text in my life.
So does that help on the farm to have...
Absolutely, yes. Especially when it comes to... Marketing is a big thing in our farm. I always like to say that we're disciplined marketers, for the simple fact that that's how our money is made. That's how we make our living, marketing.
Next, we talked about the growing season, how it went, and now harvest.
We've been quite fortunate with decent weather. We've had timely rains right from June till July 15th, which slowed down our haying operations, and thus that's why we're bumped back in with the slower harvest. But when you look around, everybody's in the same boots. That's the way it is.
We've got some crop off, some wheat.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of wheat off. Good shape, decent protein. Yields are better than what I expected to be, but preliminary right now, we don't quite know exactly where the whole farm is going to be for yield, but it's going to be average to above average.
How close are you to doing your canola?
We're going to give it a try today, but we got rained out again. Can't really do much about that.
The Makowskis took us on a tour of one of their bison pens. Andrian says they used to have cattle, but then switched to raising bison. And he says he'd never go back to cattle again.
The bison have problems also, just like every other livestock animal around. But the thing is with bison, there's different problems that I enjoy versus the problems that encounter with cattle. That's why. That's simple as that. Probably the first thing is there's with bison, you don't need any livestock housing barns. You don't need manure cleaning is pretty much eliminated. Well, it is eliminated. The straw, you don't have to bale any straw because they don't need the straw. All you have to have is the fencing is, you have to have proper fencing, but also you have to have windbreaks for them so that they're wild animals, they need shelter too.
The Makowskis have about 300 head of bison.
That includes the breeding stock of probably 200 cows, 180 cows, and the feeder calves, which we keep for 16 to 18 months because they do grow slower than cattle do.
And you were mentioning you're anticipating bringing in some additional animals from the Yukon.
Yes. They're the, not the plains, but the wood bison. So we're introducing new genetics into the herd, which is genetics, and this is from a wild herd in the Yukon. So it's always good to introduce new genetics into the herd.
Now, we had hoped to meet Donald Trump at the Makowskis farm, not the president Donald Trump, but the bull by the same name.
Yeah, we've got Donald Trump on the yard, and when he, in the wintertime, when he does like doing his dirt rolls in the snow, we call him dirt rolls, but when he does one of the breeding bulls, when he does do his dirt rolls in the snow and it shines it up, it looks like he comes out of a hair salon, and then when his hair flips up to the front, he looks like Donald Trump on TV. It's quite amusing. So that we called him Donald Trump after that.
Is he as unpredictable as the other Donald Trump?
No. Yeah, this guy is way more predictable. At least with this guy, you can pen him up. If he's bad, you pen him up, and you can do whatever you want with him. The other guy, you can't pen him up. I think that's illegal.
Congratulations to our winners this week in GX94 Supper in the Field contest, Andrian and April Makowski and their three children, Jordan, Matthew, and Larissa. It was great meeting all of them and hope they enjoyed their supper in the field. It's 12:47 now, 1:47 in Manitoba. A major Pulse funding announcement was made in Saskatoon earlier this week. Just over $18 million will go to research, market development, and innovation over the next 5 years. The bulk of it, $11.1 million, comes from the federal and provincial government's Canadian Agricultural Partnership. It will be leveraged by another $7.2 million from the Pulse sector, including nearly $1.5 million in producer levies collected by Saskatchewan Pulse growers. Corey Leeson from Radisson is chair of Saskatchewan Pulse Growers. He says the money will be allocated toward crop research and market development.
It's hard to differentiate which is more important. I mean, often as growers, we think, well, you know, I've got this production problem. We need to do something about that. But we also really need to work on trade relationships and export markets and new uses, because we can produce, but we have to be able to sell. And so the two go hand in hand. I see equal importance really on both fronts in terms of research and market development.
Canada's pulse sector wants to reduce reliance on a handful of markets. That was illustrated last year when India, our largest market for peas and lentils, imposed large tariffs, drying up sales and reducing prices. Allison Amateur is chair of Pulse Canada.
This is a really critical time for our sector. We have to adjust to some changes within our traditional markets and identify ways to remain competitive in a changing world. With this in mind, Pulse Canada has set an ambitious target to create new markets or uses for 25% of Canadian pulse production by the year 2025. That translates to roughly 2 million tons of Canadian pulses being used in new markets by 2025.
And Pulse Growers Chair Corey Leeson says there are many possibilities.
Pulses being included in processed foods is one area. Pet food is another area that illustrates huge growth potential. Aquaculture is another possibility. So that we're looking at a range of different uses, primarily focused then on North American consumption so that we can diversify the market and be a little less reliant on some of the big export markets like India and China.
Even though farmers planted 12% fewer peas and 14.5% less lentils this year, carry-in stocks are expected to rise because of the slower pace of Canadian exports. It's 10 to 1, now 10 to 2 in Manitoba.
Commodities update.
Canola futures down again at the close today. November, $489.90 a metric ton, down $1.80. January canola, $496.50, down $1.70. December, Minneapolis wheat closed today at 564 and three quarters a bushel, down a quarter cent. December, Kansas City wheat, 501 and three quarters, down 5 cents. December, Chicago wheat closed at 497 a bushel, down 9 3/4. December, corn, 350 and a half, down 2 cents. November, soybeans, 833 and a quarter, down 6 3/4 of a cent. And finally, December, oats closed today at 242 and a half, also down 4 1/4 cents. And those are today's closing grain prices. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. It's 12:53, 1:53 in Manitoba. Forgot to mention when we were interviewing our Supper in the Field winner this week, Andrian and April Makowski, that in addition to enjoying our feast of Kentucky Fried Chicken from KFC in Yorkton, Andrian and April were good enough to make us some bison burgers. Of course, they're bison ranchers, so I mean, we didn't go out and call the herd or anything. They had something tucked away in the freezer already, and April made us up some bison burgers that we did on the barbecue last night, and let me say, they were fabulous. I've heard from some people in the past that bison can tend to be dry. It's all in how you prepare it, and Andrian certainly has the special touch. And I'm sure if you want to know how to do it properly, you just give him a call and he'll fill you in, because that was unreal. Better than beef, I would say. And that's why it costs a lot more as well. Okay, we'll close out the program now with this today. Saskatchewan Attorney General Don Morgan is urging Ottawa to heed the wave of opposition to its effort to impose carbon taxation on the provinces. Of course, Saskatchewan launched a constitutional reference case in Court of Appeal back in April to challenge the government's authority to impose a carbon tax. Morgan says support for that challenge is building.
We're hoping that the federal government would look at what the public support was for it. In our province, it's in the 80% plus range. Nationwide, it's well over 50%. So I don't think there's a lot of public support for going ahead with that. So I think the public has got a better understanding of what the impacts might be than the federal government. So we're hoping that people will contact their members of parliament, write directly to the prime minister and saying, this is a flawed process. Don't do it. So we're hoping that that's what takes place. But we're hearing from individuals, we're hearing from businesses, and we're also hearing from our counterparts across the nation. Right now, Alberta withdrew from the federal climate program, so they're not part of our core challenge, but they're also now at a point where they're not supportive of what the federal government is doing. Manitoba is talking about doing different things. I'm not sure where they ultimately will land, but most surely the biggest problem for the federal government is that now Ontario has withdrawn and are joining our core challenge plus to make things even more challenging for the federal government, Ontario has now launched their own reference case in their Court of Appeal. Theirs is looking at a slightly longer timeline than ours because they've started a little bit later, but they're going through exactly the same process we are in Ontario.
Morgan says he's hopeful the federal government will rethink its position on carbon taxation.
We hope that given the issues that we have with international trade, our position that we have to be very much competitive with other jurisdictions around the world, we're hoping that the federal government will say, well, maybe we should revisit this. And the thing that I would say is look at the other things that our province and other jurisdictions are doing to try and minimize emissions. We've introduced a prairie resilience plan which focuses on resilience and on reducing emissions. So our goal is to economically have sustainable and promoting growth with no carbon tax. So by 2030, we want to have a 40% reduction in emissions from electrical generation and a 40% reduction from methane. So since 2005, our emissions intensity is down while the GDP is up 22%. So we think the things that we're doing already by way of a technology fund, by way of having zero till offset, pulse crops, things that draw carbon out. Those are the type of things that we think are the right things to do. They're sustainable. We have a carbon capture and storage electrical generation plant in our province that's now captured over 2 million tons. So we're taking a lot of steps, and we urge other jurisdictions to do the same. And we'd also ask the federal government to look carefully at those things.
Saskatchewan Attorney General Don Morgan. It's coming up on 12:58 now, 1:58 in Manitoba. We'll close out GX on Agriculture with Precision Weather next. Now, GX94's Precision Weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. A mix of sun and cloud this afternoon. Wind northwest 10 to 20, high 18. Partly to mainly cloudy tonight. Wind north 10 to 20, overnight low 4. Partly to mainly cloudy again tomorrow. Wind northeast 15 to 25, high 15. Cloudy on Saturday. East-southeast wind 15 to 30, high again 15. Sunday, 80% chance of rain, at times heavy and windy. High only 10 on Sunday. Continuing cloudy on Monday. Daytime high near 14 degrees. On the temperature roundup this hour, 9 in Saskatoon, 12 in the Paw, along with Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington. 13 degrees in Hudson Bay, 14 in Regina, along with Dauphin, Shoal Lake, and Russell. Roblin, Indian Head, 15, Broadview, Mooseman, 16 degrees. Mentioned Saskatoon in there at 9. And in the Yorkton-Melville region, partly sunny, the wind is calm. Relative humidity 55% and our temperature 15 degrees. That's our time for today. Plan to join me again tomorrow afternoon at 12:15, 1:15 in Manitoba for GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod MacDonald.